If you guys have a Bible, I would like to share with you guys out of the Gospel of John. I got to tell you a funny story about Bungie real quick. So I never met this guy before, and we're over there with just a little pack of missionaries, and all of a sudden this herd of college students comes from Austin, Texas. And so we barely know what to do with these guys because they're about, you know, five times the size of our missionary group. So we go around and Bungie's like, hey, we want to play some music. So we have to rustle up some instruments for them. And anyways, I remember giving him a djembe that he's probably going to listen to this, so I'm going to be in trouble, but I'm going to tell on him. So I'd just gotten this brand new djembe from Africa, and Bungie's all, hey, thanks for that. And he ta-kung-kung-kung-kung, totally drops it. And so I remember Bungie because there's a little chip missing out of the djembe on the bottom. So every time I see it, I remember a Bungie. So it's nothing big. It's a djembe. It's made out of wood. So it's all cool. It's carved up. So I always thought that was funny. I was just like, who is this guy? So he didn't care, man. He was just jamming. He's like, oh, it's all right. So anyways, you guys know Bungie, so you know that's not weird at all. Let's open up a little word of prayer, please. Father, I just thank you again tonight, Lord, that we just have so many examples laid out before us in black and white of how you lived and how you loved. And I pray that we would just be able to see you for who you are and for how you did things. Lord, that we might be able to love others the same. Thank you, Father. Well, as I said, did I tell you guys yet we're in chapter 13? It's my next revelation to you. John chapter 13. I've kind of got a question for you as we kind of get there. And that is, what makes an example worth following? I want you guys to think about that for a minute. Because we've got lots of examples that people follow. And I'm not necessarily saying good ones or bad ones, because I think they're mostly influential for the same reasons. What do you guys think? Any ideas? What makes an example worth following? You guys can answer. Anything? See fruit? Yeah. There's something worth following there when you see them. I think that's exactly right. I think somebody's probably got a message. They've got something that's appealing. Sorry, go ahead. No, you got to say it now. A good leader. Absolutely. Absolutely. People want to follow somebody. People want something to look at. And if whatever that is appealing, then they're going to go for it. Whether it's somebody in pop culture who's just got everything that we don't, and they're cool and we're not, or whether it's somebody to lead us in the things of God, because they're fruitful too. They're appealing. We still want that good leader. So I want you guys to think about who's been the best example to you guys and why. And I'm going to share with you one of mine as you guys think about that. And I did want to relate it to my overlap with Bungie. So it has to do with a teacher at the Bible college that I went to school at in Europe. And his name was George Clerier. And he was a missionary. And he was one of our instructors at the school. And as we taught through school, you know, we always have one outreach per semester that we go on as kind of like practical, you know, let's get outside school. Let's go visit some folks and do what we're learning about. So this particular semester, we decided to go with George as he was organizing a trip to a little town called Page, Hungary. And he was going there because, like Dave was saying, RP was out there with about four other missionaries. But they just met. I mean, three of them were Americans, and RP was a Hungarian, not from Page. So they didn't really have many connections in the city, and they were wanting to start a church. So in supporting them, this leader of ours, this teacher, organized a band, which that's where the djembe comes in from my part that, you know, Bungie dropped later. And also that's where I met my wife, whose name's Paige. So she's right over there sitting in a sweater. So this man, George, our leader, he kind of organized this band that we all got to be a part of. And we learned some Beatles songs, and we learned some Simon and Garfunkel, and we mixed in like a Third Day and a Jars of Clay, you know, and we pretended like we were something really special, you know. And they kind of thought we were for a little while, so it worked. It served its purpose. But it was just amazing to me to be a young kid just out of high school and to watch this man kind of organize and lead, you know, a group of us to develop a plan. How are we going to show people that we love them? How are we going to show them we care? We did that through music. We kind of generated some interest. We organized like some little town hall meetings that served as concerts, wherein which we shared a lot of the gospel. And all of a sudden, all these people start just getting saved. That's not, you know, transfer growth from other churches. These are just kids off the street that liked our music and loved the gospel and got saved. And so it was incredible to come in one Sunday, you know, and realize that there's only four little missionaries here. And by the next Sunday, by the time we left, there's like 25 people there that had never been there before, didn't even know there was a church there before because there wasn't one. So that's my example that I want to share with you guys on somebody that's been a great example to me. Just a real practical way of this is how you can think, plan, facilitate God to move in a way that'll bring fruit. So now as a guy who's grown up a couple of years, and if I was to ever talk about what would it take to start a little outreach if you wanted to yield fruit of a little fellowship, you know what? I could say that I could go out and I could do that, you know, the nuts and bolts of that. Obviously, the Lord has to do it. But I could follow the example. And the reason I can follow it is because I saw it happen. I saw my leader do it. Therefore, I was much more empowered, or I could be, to go out and do the same thing. So, with that, I'd just like to say and get into some context to John chapter 13. At this point in the book of John, Jesus is, he's been with his disciples for, I would say, roughly 3 years. And by the time you get to John chapter 13, you know, we're on the Passover supper of the night before Jesus is betrayed and arrested. So we're literally hours away from his captivity, where in which we start the crucifixion process. And so 3 years of teaching, 3 years of living life, you know, culminate to a few chapters in our Bible, a few precious chapters in John, where Jesus really says, all these things you've seen me do, I want you to go out and to go do it now. It's time for you to do what you've seen. And so I'd like to kind of read the verse that we're going to kind of anchor on tonight. And that's in chapter 13 in verse 34. Jesus says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Now, as I read this, obviously Jesus is saying this is a new commandment I give to you. But are these thoughts new in the Bible? What do you guys think? No? Anybody remember any verses that kind of sound like anything Jesus said? There's a couple, and if you're taking notes, you can kind of jot these down and take a look at them later. You know, but Jesus said in another part of the gospel, he said the whole law and the prophets are summed up within this phrase, that you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and that you should love your neighbor as yourself. You guys remember him saying that? So there's a couple places in the Old Testament that was referenced as well. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 5, it says you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. and in a portion of a verse out of Leviticus, Leviticus 19:8, it actually says you should love your neighbor as yourself. So what is it Jesus is trying to say? Do you think Jesus forgot about these verses in Deuteronomy and Leviticus? You know, is Jesus contradicting the Bible? Dun, dun, dun. You know, those are the questions you love to hear. But, you know, these verses are given in a specific context, you know, in the Old Testament. And like much of the law, you know, it's just kind of written on tablets of stone. You know, that was the last message that Bungie taught on a Wednesday night when Paige and I came to visit. He was teaching out of the book of Exodus, talking on the Ten Commandments. And so that's why the Lord kind of brought this passage to mind, is that you know, another look at the law from Jesus' perspective. And I don't think it's so much as that Jesus is saying these are brand new words that you've never heard, but maybe I'd like you to look at these words through the eyes of my example, how I live this out for you guys. So that the example is what I want to look at, is how Jesus did that. So Jesus said we're to love one another as he loved us. So if Jesus did that, you know, I want to look in the context of John chapter 13 on how he did that practically. And not only what he said to do, but how Jesus did it. And maybe the motivation of why he wants us to do it. You know, what's the point? What's the application? Why is it important for us to love one another? Just because you loved us. We know that you loved us. Tell us how that's going to make a difference for the kingdom. I know that I've got a friend of mine in Amarillo who is from a different culture. He's from the Middle East, and he's really frustrated because he was talking to me about the stubborn will of his own son, and the son was getting ready to go off to college, and my friend BJ, he wanted his son to go to a college that was close by. It'd be like saying, I want you to go to UT because you'd be close to me. I'll pay for your way. BJ's a doctor, so he can say that. You know, I'll pay for your school. You stay close to me. And his son is a lot like his dad. He's got his own opinion, his own strong will. He's got his own ideas. And he was telling to his dad, he said, no, I'm going to go to Texas Tech. And BJ says, let me tell you this. Their football team's not near as good. No, he didn't say that. He said, I'm your dad. You're going to UT so I can keep an eye on you. And if you don't go to UT, you can pay for your own college at Tech. And his son said, all right, I'll take out loans. That's why they have them. And so my friend BJ is just so frustrated at his son, yet he can only be frustrated so much because he knows that he's the exact same way. And he told me this quote. Paige and I have a couple little kids. They're 3 and 4 years old. And he says, BJ said, Billy, you remember this. He said, your kids will not do what you tell them to do. He said, your kids will do what you do. That's what they do. I was like, BJ, I'm a young dad. I don't like to hear that. But that's the truth, I think. I think really that we can have all these ideas. We can have these things just commanded to us, you know. But really, I'm a lot more motivated to do them when I've seen somebody live it out and I've seen the fruit of that. You know, and I think Jesus wants it to be the same way for us. He's not just going to tell us to do something. First, he's going to live it out for us. He's going to show us the fruit of it. So we're going to look at this story in John chapter 13 of how Jesus showed his disciples that. So let's read together in verse 1. We're going to read a little ways. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And during the supper, when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, arose from supper, and he laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, he tied it around his waist. And he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him.
He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, do not wash my feet." And Jesus said to him, "What I am doing to you, you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash, you have no part with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet also, but also my hands and my head." And Jesus said to him, "The one who has bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean, and you are clean, but not every one of you." For he knew who was about to betray him. That was why he said, "Not all of you are clean." And when he had washed their feet, he put on his outer garments and resumed his place. And he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right to do so, for I am. If then I, your teacher and Lord, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet." So I'm sure we've all heard at least this story, probably studied it on many occasions. But I'd like to look at the context of it with you real quick. First of all, this is a very special time, very intimate time with Jesus, as he knows more than anybody else. I have a real brief time frame with these guys before I'm about to leave them. He is only with his disciples. He's not with a lot of other people who are just flocking around him to see what he's going to do. He does have Judas with him, he says, and he knew that Judas was about to betray him. But Jesus wanted to minister to these guys at this point in time. So this looks like a time that's very focused on, what we might call the church, what we might call the body, and how we minister to each other. And Jesus, at this time when time is really at a premium, he chooses to do something that really takes a lot of time in pre-planning. He gathers up this bowl and he gathers a towel. He takes aside the clothes he has on because he knows that he's going to get dirty. But he has something to communicate. And he knows that not only is what he needs to communicate important, but how he does it. So he takes great care and he knows that he's going to get dirty. So in that culture, I'm sure you guys have talked about, why somebody might need their feet washed. They don't live in Austin, Texas. They're in Israel, before the days of paved roads and before the days of, Nike Airs. So they're walking around in their sandals everywhere or riding on a donkey and such. And naturally their feet get dirtier than anything else just by turning up dust. So when they would go into someone's house and it would be a pretty nice setting, they obviously put a nice meal together, I'm sure, for the Passover, as nice as they could. And here they are at their setting. And rather than having a servant wash the feet of everybody, Jesus chooses to do what a servant might do. But I don't think that Jesus did it out of nobody's going to wash the feet, I guess I'll wash the feet, or feeling like he got stuck with a job that he didn't really want. This was part of how he showed love, and he wanted his disciples to see that. So you see in verse 4 that he rose from the table, put aside his outer garments. He took the towel and he put it around his waist. He poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wash them with the towel. I just really see here that Jesus cares about every part of these guys. Not only does he care about every part, he cares about the dirtiest parts. So he takes time and care and preparation to gather the proper materials to wash them, to deal with what's gotten them dirty. And when I think about, our situation in a little body, as we have here in a group, this church, obviously I'm not saying the application is that we should all, whoop off our feet, whoop off our shoes. That'd be an interesting night at church, wouldn't it? Take off our shoes and start washing each other's feet. I think the point is that Jesus knew how to take care, see needs, and to minister to those needs, even though they be practical, even though they be, not the biggest things in the world to conquer. He wanted to bless them, you know. It says in other parts of the world, in other parts of the word, excuse me, that we should wash one another. In reference to the body. In reference to the body, Jesus said that husbands are to wash their wives with the water of the word. That we're to take care with how we handle them. And to use God's truth to minister. And I really see that as kind of a thought that can overlay real nicely with this. When we just see that Jesus took initiative with his disciples. He didn't wait till someone asked him. He saw something that he could do and he just didn't. You know, Peter objected right away when Jesus started to wash his feet. You know, so Jesus, it's not something he's like, you know, hey, Peter, I was kind of thinking about washing your feet. Would that be okay with you? You know, of course, Peter's going to say, no, be quiet, sit down. That's weird. You know, Jesus just did it. He had a discernment in his heart of what God was telling him to do. And he just did it. And sometimes we'll have to do that with one another. Sometimes we'll just have to say, you know what, this person may not want me to let them bless them like this. You know, but as we hear from God and as we see something that just, you know, looks like somebody could use a little fresh water, a little refreshment. You know, we can do that. We can wash each other's feet that way. Jesus knew how to cleanse. Like I was sharing, husbands ought to know how to cleanse their wives with the water of the word. And I wonder if we have a working knowledge of the Bible to where when we see somebody who just kind of seems not that they've been dirty, but just like this world has just gotten a lot of dirt on them. You just kind of feel grimy some days working in the job that I work with around the people. That sometimes it just, you know, I got a little grime on me, a little Austin grime, you know. Probably in a real similar way to people just walk around the city and they stir up dust on their legs and on their feet back then. You just cruise around Austin, and you guys don't need me to tell this, you know. Austin can kind of get you dirty, you know what I mean? I'm not saying it's a bad place. I'm saying it's the world. It's like any other city. It's the world. And if you're just out there and you're getting roughed up by the world, you know, you can get dirty. And Jesus gave us an example of just taking some time and some tenderness to wash each other, to wash us from those things. He was very determined in it. And as we transition through this story, I want to read with you a little bit further. Verse 16, Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." And then he talks about Judas a little bit more. If you want to skip down with me to verse 20. "Truly, truly, I say to you, whoever receives the one I send receives me, and whoever receives me receives the one who sent me." You know, like we were talking about earlier, Jesus knew that he was sent. He knew why he was here. It wasn't a mystery to him. It wasn't something that surprised Jesus. You know, it says all through the Gospels, you know, Jesus would say, "I know that I have come as a light into the world, that whoever believes in me should not walk in darkness. I have come to seek and save that which is lost. I have come that you guys might have life and might have it more abundantly." Jesus was clear with the fact that he was sent from God for a specific purpose. And yet you see Jesus, this person with great purpose, you know, our Savior that had everything planned out perfectly, how he goes and he takes time when there's not much time to do something tedious, like get out a bowl and some water and wash some feet. You know, I think if any of us knew that we really had a position of power, yet we had to do something menial, I know in myself I might feel a little bit, you know, kind of like, now tell me why I'm doing this again. You know, if all of a sudden I found out that I'm the,
you know, the CEO of a company, and then, you know, I see on my daily agenda, you know, have a lot of big power meetings, meet all the right people, rub elbows, go wash the toilets, you know, I might be thinking, hey, something on this list doesn't go with the others, you know. And I think that if we ever try to do something out of a spirit of guilt, or like, this is the right thing to do for that person, so I'm going to help them out. You know, I need to sit in with the children at children's ministry, you know, so I'm going to do that. You know, people, our true feelings are really going to show. You guys know that. You guys have seen people who are kind of serving, kind of just there, you know. But if there's anybody who would ever feel like they have experienced a demotion, you know, it would have been Jesus. I mean, think about where he's come from. I mean, this could be a whole series of messages in and of itself. To come from heaven, perfect order, perfect government, perfect peace, and choose to come to a place of imperfection, to come to a place of stinky feet. You know, what's amazing to me, I mean, Jesus came to planet Earth at a time before air conditioning, you know, before the paved roads, before indoor plumbing. I mean, he came at kind of the height of stinkiness, you know, I would think. So that as all these guys are kind of, you know, really, you've seen the pictures, lounging around a table. I mean, think about the guys that Jesus, think about the guys he rolled with. I mean, these are not the high-ups of society. They are fishermen. And on top of that, they might have been homeless fishermen. You know, I just picture these big hairy guys kind of all laying around a table. And if you go to wash feet, I think you might get a little bit more than, you know, just swamp foot. I think you might get the whole swamp, if you know what I'm saying. You know, and if you're in a position where all of a sudden you want to love somebody, yet you come to the, you know, you find the most offensive part, that's really where you're going to love somebody. You know, and I think a church, and if we all had the attitude of, you know what, I want to find something in you that I can give some refreshment to, that I can give some clean water, wipe that off with the word, what a blessing that would be to new folks in the fellowship. You know, but I think that sometimes we get into the thought that, you know, church is just for about me to come through and me to get my washing, you know, and then I move back out, because it is a, you know, a grimy life we live in. You know, but I think the church is, you know, Jesus told his disciples, remember, you are to love one another as I have loved you. Jesus said, I have washed your feet, you ought to wash one another's feet. You know, and I kind of thought of Bungie, you know, he's not just a guy, you know, who watches the people pass by and, you know, he breaks out the pressure washer and just blasts everybody as they, you know, shuffle in and shuffle out. You know, we're to be proactive with one another. We're all to learn how to pick up that bucket and that towel, and to just kind of get into people's lives a little bit, because they are going to, hey, what are you doing? Stand up. You don't belong there. You know, how is your family really doing? You know, how's your job really going? You know, if we can get past the, oh, you're good? Good. All right. Don't have to mess with anything with you, you know. You know, to get past that is really monumental, when you can really see into people's lives and let people see into your lives. So that you can be able to have something to wash, you know, if we're all just, I'm good, all right, everybody's good. Wonder what we're doing here. You know, allow one another. I know I'm hugely blessed, you know, when pastors share from the word and, you know, it finds a place to wash something in me that really needs washed, something that really needs refreshed. You know, Jesus said we're to do that for each other. And the power that Jesus had to do that, I feel, really comes from the fact that he knew that he was sent to do it. You know, if you know this is my role when I'm with the body of Christ, you know, all of a sudden you realize, you know, this isn't a burden. This isn't tedious. This is the abundant life that Jesus had. Jesus didn't come to be served. He came to serve. And then we, you know, see that he's, you know, has the most fruitful, abundant life of anybody we've ever known. It says that he was a man of great joy in the book of Hebrews. Yet he did some really funny things at funny times. I want to read now this part. I'm going to skip verses 21 through 30. You guys can go back and read it. That's talking more in depth about what was going on with Judas. But in verse 31, when he had gone out talking about Judas, Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and glorify him at once. Little children, yet a little while, and I am with you. You will seek me, and just as I said to the Jews, so now I also say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. By this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." You know, and I just, when somebody gains your heart as an example, you know, I think about the man I was talking about earlier, George. You know, if I had some questions or if I was wondering what to do, and George would tell me, you know, this is what you should do, and he's washing me with the word, you know, I can do that. I can go do that. You guys are so blessed, you know, I feel, with having Bungie as your pastor, because he is a man who is out washing people's feet, out doing outreach, out evangelizing. You know, you guys can be with him as the disciples were with Christ. They just went through life with him. I just went on a mission trip with this guy, George, and I saw how he did things, and all of a sudden it's like, you know what? I can do that. You know, the same way, you guys can tag along with Bungie as he does the art reaches on the Thursday nights and talks to kids from UT. I mean, you guys can gain that heart. You guys can gain the blessing of seeing somebody's eyes open for the first time with the Lord. You know, the disciples, they went through these 3 years with Jesus. So when he says, "You guys go do to other people as I've just done to you," you know, it's easy for them to say, "Yeah, we can do that." Here Jesus is. He knows he's about to go to the cross. He's about to pour out his blood for this new thing called the church. And what does he tell his guys to do? "You guys love one another." I love that Jesus didn't give us a marketing campaign, you know, for how to go out and just do some big programs to draw new people in. I think it's really revolutionary if it could. You know, I just feel that the Lord's heart is, if you guys can love each other like this, Jesus said, "By doing this, all people will know that you are my disciples." The work is going to speak for itself. You know, if people see this, they see real love happening, they see people taking care of people, they see them growing in the Lord. I mean, that's addictive. That's appealing. People want that. They're going to hunger after the love of Christ. The ache in their heart is going to reach out to that. Jesus didn't say, "By your dramatic teaching, all people will know that you're my disciples. By your incredible children's ministry. Or by anything else. By loving one another as I have shown you to do." Everybody's going to know who you follow. You know, our aim is to glorify Christ Christ says, everybody's going to know who you belong to by the fact that you can do this and really do it how I did it. I find it very, very much a blessing that I think Jesus' heart is that we don't have to sell a product to try to get one convert. You know, and to work so hard that we just kill ourselves in doing so. But if the body life can take form, if we can learn how to get past the facade and to crack into people's lives and to just administer the word with gentleness. You know, there are some hard-headed guys out there like me who would, you know, it's good for me every once in a while to get, you know, cracked over the head with a hard word because I'm a knucklehead. You know, but I think for most folks, you know, you'll really gain entrance to their heart by being kind, by being tender, and maybe taking care of something that's pretty sensitive to them. You know, if somebody pried off my shoes and socks, I'd be a little bit, I'd feel a little awkward too, you know. And that's just clothes. I mean, what about matters of the heart? You know, when somebody can get to that point and be able to clean a little bit, that's where ministry is. That's how Jesus showed us. And so I just want to encourage you guys to learn from Jesus' example. You know, I have a real bad habit of just doing things as I see somebody else do them. You know, if my dad's the type of guy who whenever he sees a motorist broken down on the side of the road and my dad can find any reason why to pass that motorist, you know, I'll probably be a guy who finds every reason why to pass by that motorist. You know, oh, I see he's got a cell phone. Okay, that's good. Oh, looks pretty dangerous. Oh, I've got kids in the car. You know, if I watch my dad and that's all he does, when I get to be a dad, that's probably exactly what I'm going to do. I think it's our nature that we kind of just learn from each other's example. You know, but if my dad was always the guy who found a reason to pull over, if every problem is an opportunity to break out that bucket and that towel and wipe them clean, share the gospel with them. If I saw every weird opportunity as an opportunity to share the gospel, you guys know there's a lot of opportunity out there. And Jesus says, learn from me. So I think it takes quite a bit of effort, you know, to get our eyes off of just what we see everybody else doing and really learn from his heart. I know he wants to share it. Let's pray real quick.